Do supernatural miracles happen today? We discuss this and more with special guest Dr. Craig Keener on this episode of The Overthinkers. Hello, thinking people's thinking people. Welcome to The Overthinkers, a home for people who love to have fun thinking deeply. I'm your host, Joseph Holmes, filmmaker, film critic, lovable gadfly, and with me as always is my skeptical softy co-host.
Nathan Clarkson, actor, author, filmmaker, and now I finally get to say columnist. Real quick, I'm going to give you a plug for my new column. It's on patheos.com, the magazine, and I run a column now called Cross in Culture that is the intersection of art and faith. And that means everything from movies, music, books, and what they have to do with faith. So if you want to check out more articles and thoughts from yours truly about those things, please head over to patheos.com/crossandculture. But that's it for me, my shameless plug for my new column.
I have to say, I really like the interview you did of that first interview you did with film critic. Yes,
that's true. So everybody, if you really want an inside look at Joseph, because I'm lazy and don't want to write things myself, I do interviews. And so I interviewed my co-host here, Joseph, about what it's like being a Christian film critic. So please head over there and give that article and interview some likes and love.
Yes, my self-esteem is entirely dependent on it. So go do that right away. And with us today is a very special guest. He's an author and professor of biblical studies at Ashbury Theological Seminary. He's the author of 37 books with 1.4 million copies in circulation, which have won 13 national and international awards, including 6 from Christianity Today. He has authored roughly 100 academic articles, 7 booklets, and roughly 200 popular level articles. His IVP Bible Background Commentary in New Testament, which provides cultural background for each passage of the New Testament, has alone sold more than 500,000 copies. He's written commentaries on Matthew, Romans, 1st, 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, 1st Peter, Revelation, John, and Acts. His other books include a 2-volume work on miracles and works of the Spirit, ethnic reconciliation, women in ministry, divorce, and various other topics. He is one of those books on miracles is the book Miracles Today, which documents modern day miracles. And of course, all the proceeds for that are given to modern day missions. Please welcome today the courageous, the charismatic, the cool Dr. Craig Keener. Dr. Keener, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. I like the alliteration with the kuh sound. if only my middle name began with a kuh sound, it would be great.
Yes.
Well, yes. I'm so happy you're here today. As people know, if you listen to our past 200 episodes, I'm a man of faith, I'm a person of faith, I love my faith, but I'm also, along with that, a bit of a skeptic, particularly when it comes to miracles and a lot of the things we can't define in our faith. I think my faith is reasonable, but as soon as it goes beyond kind of these definitional things that we can see, hear, taste, touch, and see and measure, I get a little queasy. So today I'm really excited to be talking about miracles with you, Dr. Keener. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes.
Well, it's good to have a balance, because if you don't have at least a little skepticism, you end up with gullibility. So.
Perfectly balanced, as all things should be.
Exactly.
You fit in right here, sir. First, before we get to talking about miracles, Nathan, if people enjoy our discussion and want to engage with more of our skeptical but open content and meet fellow overthinkers like themselves, where can they go?
They can go to theoverthinkersjournal.world, where they can find out more about their hosts, and it's there they can send us all of their love and hate mail. They can also go to the online Overthinkers group on Facebook called The Overthinkers, where we have almost 20,000 overthinkers getting into great discussions about all the fun stuff we talk about here. And fair warning, it's mostly memes. So if you like memes and funny things, please head over. We'd love to have you among our ranks. If you do enjoy the podcast, please consider leaving a review or sharing with a friend. It really does help us so very much.
Awesome. Everybody ready?
Let's do it.
Great. So Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines miracle as an extraordinary event manifesting divine intervention in human affairs. It used to be that pretty much everyone around the world believed in miracles as defined by as such. That is, they believed that God or gods or supernatural beings interacted with people and subverted the normal course of events with relative frequency. Hence the normalcy of historical epics like the Iliad and the Odyssey featuring the regular meddling of gods in human affairs. In many parts of the world, that expectation continues to be true. But after the Enlightenment, influenced in large part by philosophers like David Hume and greater scientific discoveries and cultural the Enlightenment and such, cultural current has been skepticism over the existence of the supernatural in general and believing in miracles in particular. Among Christians, this takes the form of a debate between cessationism and continuationism. Cessationists broadly believe that after the last of the initial apostles of Jesus died, the age of miracles ceased, as seen in the documentary Cessationism. Continuationists believe that they continued, but that Enlightenment philosophies have made us more skeptical to them. Dr. Keener, you're an academic who's written multiple books documenting miracle claims in the New Testament and today. But you started out as an atheist and then became a Christian who, you know, was sort of open but cautious to finally kind of becoming what you are today. So how did you go from there to here?
I would like to be able to say that, it makes a better story if I could say that I was intellectually convinced of the truth of Christianity, but that's not how it happened with me. I was convinced, but it wasn't through intellectual argument or people giving me data. It wasn't through witnessing a miracle, which would have certainly given me pause for thought. It was actually some people shared Christ with me on the street. You know, I had been an atheist for a number of years, and I actually had made fun of Christians. You know, they're nice atheists. I was not one of the nice ones. But they shared Christ with me. I argued with them for 45 minutes. But as I left, you know, I'd studied different religions. I'd talked with people about different things, especially I'd studied different philosophies, but also different religions. But I had an overwhelming encounter with the Holy Spirit. Of course, I'm saying this from my Christian perspective, but it was just so overwhelming. It was like, I can't deny that God is in the room with me. It wasn't like I could explain it away because it was like nothing I'd ever had happened before. So that was, I said, I don't understand. They told me that Jesus dying for me and rising from the dead is what could make me right with God. And I was like, well, you know, I don't understand how that works, but God, you're here. And if that's what you're saying, I'll believe it, but I don't know how to be made right with you. So if you want to make me right with you, I need you to do it yourself. And I felt something rushing through my body like I'd never felt before. Jumped up, scared out of my mind. but that was basically the beginning of my Christian life. And after that, I was playing catch up. The little kids in Sunday school knew more about the Bible than I did. So that was the beginning. But I still had all these same questions I'd had before that needed intellectual answers. And so I eventually began to tackle them one by one. And I think, you know, once I was a Christian, I believed in principle that miracles could happen. They're in the Bible. But I wasn't really expecting to see any or expecting to hear of any. And so when I started hearing them, you know, I was like, okay, that makes some sense, but I could think of another explanation for it. But eventually there was just too much of it for me to just dismiss it like that. But what eventually became the turning point in terms of actually looking for evidence that might be persuasive to somebody like the way I had thought as an atheist, which, even though I was a mean atheist, I wasn't a dogmatic one. I mean, I was open to evidence of some sort, at least. Nobody had been giving me, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. They had given me some. I guess I was a little bit dogmatic. But anyway, I'm writing commentaries. I'm a New Testament scholar, so I'm working on historical issues in the Gospels and Acts. And when you're working on historical issues, what comes up is, well, I could argue about all these other things, say based on the genre, based on extra biblical evidence and so on. you know, the things we can check, this fits really well. But one historical question was the argument of Troeltsch, which goes back to David Hume, whom he mentioned. We don't see these things happening today. Eyewitnesses would never claim things like this. So why should we believe that it ever happened? And, you know, you can decide whether that's a good argument or not. But I'm like, how can you say eyewitnesses never claim this? Eyewitnesses claim this all the time. I mean, what world are you guys living in? So I said, okay, well, I'm just going to find a few works that catalog some of these where they're not just taking everybody's opinion, but at least, you know, people who are known for credibility somewhere else, people have something to lose by it, particularly if it's somebody I know well enough to know something about their integrity. I mean, we're not always 100% right about that, but, you know, just doing due diligence to at least try to come up with something where the people at least believe that what they experienced was miraculous. And then, you know, just to see if some of these things were actually unusual, because there are varying degrees of, like, the dictionary definition, is it extraordinary? Well, how extraordinary does it have to be? I didn't find what I was looking for initially. I'm sure, well, actually, I found it since then. But so I started cataloging some of the reports myself. And the footnote, which is all it was originally, grew and grew. And after about 200 pages, I said, this cannot be. I can't keep doing this in this commentary. It's too big for a footnote. So obviously, so that ended up being the 1,100-page book. The more recent one that you talked about, Miracles Today, actually is 10 years later. I have some stronger evidence than in the first book, although not as much because I needed to keep this one short and readable. So that was how I got started on it. But what really changed my own thinking on it, because I would interview people, but I'd interview them not as an atheist, but I'd interview them with skeptical questions. I wanted to see how sturdy their testimony was. And so I could usually come up with something else somehow. But cumulatively, it started being too much. It was just happening too often. And the one that really was the turning point for me was when I interviewed Antoinette Mulambe in Congo. I'd heard the story before, but you know, she was the eyewitness I needed to interview. So I was interviewing her, and she told me about, well, she told me a lot of stories, but then I wanted to ask her about this one in particular. So she told me about when her daughter Therese was 2 years old, she cried out that she was bitten by a snake. Antoinette found her not breathing. There was no medical help available in the village, obviously. People, they misrepresent you when you talk about miracles. I do believe in going to doctors. I do believe God has provided us medical technology. By all means, use it. But there was no medical help available in the village. She strapped the child to her back, ran to a nearby village, and their family friend, Coco Ngomomoise, prayed for the child. The child started breathing again immediately. The next day, she was fine. She now has a master's degree. She just recently retired. The child is now like my age. She's not a child. But I asked Antoinette Mulambe, how long was it that she wasn't breathing? And she hadn't really thought about that before. So she had to stop and think about how to get from the one village to the other village, because she didn't know. 6 minutes with no oxygen, irreparable brain damage starts in. So she stopped and thought, and, you know, thinking of the terrain, the topography, she said it was about 3 hours. And this one got my attention because Therese, the child, is my sister-in-law, and Antoinette Mulambe was my mother-in-law. And not to doubt one's mother-in-law, but we did consult with Coco Moise, who was the other witness present, and he told the same thing.
Wow, this is This is really, really interesting. I'm excited to have this conversation because, unlike a lot of the topics we talk about on this show, this topic is particularly interesting because, with any other topic, usually you have two sides, right? When it comes to addressing the issue at hand, you have one side who wants to be true and one side who doesn't want to be true. And I'm sure there are people who don't want miracles to be true, but generally speaking, I think most of us actually want miracles to exist. We would like to believe that the people we know who are suffering could have something miraculous happen. Well, they will be saved. They will be helped. We want to believe that the people we know who are sick will be well again in some miraculous moment. We want to know that we, if something should befall us or terrible or we're going through something, can have something miraculous happen to us. I think most people deep down desire that miracles would happen. But here we are talking about whether or not they do, particularly in this modern day. And I think there's a lot of people, actually, I'd argue probably the majority of people don't believe they can. Now, this is not a Christian position. Most Christian, and you'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. It could be the more majority do, but there are a strong contingent of people who do not believe that miracles can happen. And I wonder if there is some frustration there when you hear a Christian talk about miracles can happen, right? Because I will speak personally. I want to believe in miracles. I want to believe they happen today. I want to believe that if something befalls me or a family member or a friend, that there's a way that I can pray. There's a hope that I can have that there will be a miraculous event. But there is something that stops me. And I believe that a lot of other people experience these too. And when I say something, it's a few different things. On the one hand, I grew up with religious claims of miracles happening. I am someone who suffers from pretty severe mental illness. And I remember, I was diagnosed very early in my life, and I remember multiple people and places praying over me and telling me if I believed enough, if I prayed the correct way, my mental illness would be gone. And just so all of you can know, I did pray with a believing heart. It wasn't me being, I wasn't, you know, a 12-year-old with a skeptical heart going, there's no way. I believed, you know, when you're young, you want to believe in these things. And the suffering I was encountering at that time was something I didn't want to. So I wanted to believe there'd be a miracle. And lo and behold, I am, you know, in my 30s now, and I still deal with the same mental illness that I was told if I prayed the right way, believed enough, would go away. And so I think a lot of people have wanted to believe in miracles, but then they do the thing that they're told to do to see one happen, it doesn't happen. And then even when they look at the landscape of supposed miracles, very often it's very inconsistent. You know, God will let a baby die of cancer, but he'll get someone else a parking place so they can get to their job interview on time. And so this creates this kind of frustration. So you're dealt with this hand where you go, I either am mad at God, because he's, you know, yes, you can give the argument, oh, he knows more and his will is best, but that's not very satisfactory. So basically you have two options. Either I'm going to be angry at the Almighty or not believe him at all. I'm going to be angry that he's so inconsistent in his miracle doling out, or I have to believe that miracles don't exist. And that's kind of the camp I fall into, which is for me to believe in miracles, it would create in me a frustration with God at watching all of the pain and suffering, even by truly innocent people, like a baby, like a holy person, and watching prayers go unanswered, and then watching a prayer, a claim of a miracle, well, I, you know, had a backache in and now it feels better. And so I think there's a lot of frustration with God there, and we're left with this, I either have to hate God or I just have to not believe in miracles, and not believe in miracles seems like the better thing to do than ultimately hating God. And so that is one thing that I think the people really struggle with. And I'm going to put a few contentions in here because I want you to be able to speak your experience in your study, because you know so much more about this than I do. But I think another way that I've heard a lot of people, and also particularly affects kind of my view of miracles, is this idea that very often the people who espouse the miracles and Joseph and I have talked about this, and you'll talk more about this, they're not measurable. We can't actually see this. It's not caught on video. And if it is, we you know there's a lot of things caught on video, but you know that can be doctored or whatever. But there hasn't been tons of huge events where we can see, at least in so far as I know, where it was convincing to huge amounts of people. But then even if it is, the more I've studied psychology, I've been studying psychology quite a few years now. By a few years, I mean a long time. The psychology of how the humans recall things is very, very unreliable. How we remember things, and it's very affected by other people, by groupthink. And you've heard the term shared psychosis. You've even heard the term a power suggestion. When I was a young guy, before I got into acting, I wanted to be a magician. One of the things that you learn as a magician is the power of suggestion. And this is, you learn it in sales. And the more I study psychology and in people who believe in miracles, there is kind of a through line to the personality types who end up kind of full cell buying into this. And this more impressionable people generally who are good targets for having someone pressure them into believing, who want to believe. And they're the same kind of people who, you know, we've seen these different like mentalist shows where people are hypnotized and start, you know, barking like a dog. And it turns out that most of that's fake. Well, I'm going to say all of it's fake. But typically what these performers are skilled at seeing is the kind of people who will be impressionable enough to do these things. And so there's a power of suggestion there. And then my, you know, one of the last ones is, you know, there's also huge miraculous claims from literally every other religious group in history. And there has been from the Buddhists, from the Hindus, from the Muslims, from the Jews, there has been miraculous claims in every group that's ever, religious group that's ever taken place on this earth. And so for me, it's not only that you'll have to prove miracles exist, but you're gonna have to disprove everybody else's. And so that's, I think, a really, really difficult task. And my worry with all these pushbacks isn't just benign. I don't just have like, you know, you shouldn't, or, you know, I don't, but whatever. My worry is that if we're not careful, one, this can enable spiritual leaders to abuse impressionable people. And we have seen that. I think probably most people even do agree with miracles. I've seen this, who can extort money or whatever it might be, influence power over impressionable people who want to believe in miracles. And we've seen plenty of documentaries about this. But also, even more personally, I worry that it can distort our view of God if we're not careful. Because if we begin to see God in a way where he doles out miracles either randomly or only to the people who perform correctly, and we've heard a lot of this in the modern church, if you pray hard enough, if you believe hard enough, then you'll get it. And I think that can give us a destructive view of God. It can affect us negatively. And I don't want to see that. So that's why I'm very careful when I'm speaking about miracles. Now, I will say really quickly before I hand off to Joseph and we let you kind of talk into a lot of these questions. But I do believe that there is a delineation here between can and does. So if we're talking about do miracles happen or can miracles happen, I believe that God is all powerful. I believe he was the designer and creator of nature. And so he has complete power to work within it how he chooses. So the question for me isn't can he. I do believe he can. And I believe that Jesus performed miracles to establish himself as divine here. But I don't think that he does. You know, Jesus even talks about you will go on to do greater things than me. And it's interesting that we always think that these things are literal. When he said you will bring dead people back to life, et cetera, et cetera. We always kind of have this literal look. When you look, at least in my eyes, at the thrust of how Jesus communicated, and even just through how the other biblical writers communicate, it's almost, I mean, not, I'm going to say entirely, it's very often in metaphorical terms. And so I will say, actually, in a way, I have seen and encountered miracles, but they're not the way we understand them or that most people conceptualize them. I have seen people leave addiction and come back to life where they were once dead. I consider that a miracle. I've seen myself work through my mental illness. And I think that is a miracle. And that it is from God, but it's through my relationships, not necessarily a physical or a physiological one that happened in my mind. I have seen people, marriages where people hated each other, I've seen them come back together and become strong. I think that's a miracle. I have seen miracles, but they're ones of the spirit and the soul and the mind. They're not ones where generally limbs grow back and you know, people are brought back from the physical dead. I threw a lot at you, and we're gonna let you address all those, but Joseph, kind of disseminate what we're talking about here, and then we're gonna let Dr. Keener jump in and give his far more educated opinions than we have.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna add a lot in terms of like the kinds of questions, but I am gonna kind of talk about sort of my own story and you know, and narrow, you know, some of it, add to develop some of those ideas. I also, you know, I grew up as a Christian. I grew up in the Episcopal Church. I like to joke with people that I grew up Episcopal and coincidentally also Christian. You know, but I also, like Nathan, I dealt with very, you know, personal kind of unhealed illnesses in my family for a long time. My dad was a pastor and he suffered with illnesses his whole life. Since he was a child, you know, he got healed, you know, a kidney transplant with doctors, but eventually that gave out and I, you know, watched him slowly decline and eventually die. And my sister, her whole life has been in a wheelchair and, you know, she continues to believe in an eventual miraculous recovery. And I, you know, salute her for that. But, you know, for myself, you know, what I've observed is certainly in my own personal life, you know, prayers and people believing that, you know, being convinced that God has shown them that that these people are going to be healed and not healed. And, you know, I feel like I'm intellectually honest enough to know, like, look, I can, you know, just because this happened to me, for me, doesn't mean it doesn't happen. You know, I can accept that. And I even am more comfortable perhaps than Nathan is with the idea that perhaps the reason that God does it with some people and not others is because he knows more than I do. And he has his reasons. I can wrap my head around that philosophically and emotionally. But I do find, and I, like you, I hear all of these stories about miracles happen, you know, from second or third hand and stuff like that, that seem pretty darn miraculous. And it seems like, well, how can you deny, you know, all of those testimonies by seemingly reasonable people you have no reason to believe, you know, would be lying or stuff like that. And I find that plausible. And also, again, I look at the Bible and I look at the Bible and I don't see a lot of strong evidence that this says anywhere that these are going to cease. So, you know, certainly there's no verse that says here they're going to cease after this. You have to read stuff into it in order to make that case. Doesn't mean it's wrong, but it's just it doesn't seem to be obvious. And so I'm disposed to believe theologically that they would happen. But the closer I get to, like, you know, in my own life or talking to people where I can kind of question the miracle or look at the miracle that they're talking about, you know, and ask them tough questions about it, the more often it seems like things that could be ambiguous or could be, you know, the miracles happen, or it could, like, sure, it could be a miracle or it could be psychosomatic. It could be, you know, a miracle or it could be the doctors made a mistake or whatever. You know, the closer I get to these questions, the more happens like that. And you address a little bit of this in the book, which I credit you for. I mean, you address a lot in the book, but this specific thing, one thing I bring up often, you know, which always makes me a fun person at parties, there is a very mean-spirited website that was around during the early 2000s that was titled, and it was you know, back in the you know, made by, you know, a bunch of angry 13-20 you know, teenage boys, but the title of the website was "Why Does God Hate Amputees?" And the point of it was, the satirical point of it was that, to that point, that most of the miracles that we see are ones that could be ambiguously, could have another explanation. But the miracles we don't see a lot of, if any, are ones that really are unmistakably miracles, such as, you know, somebody's arm growing back or things growing back. And that's always been the difficulty for me in accepting the idea of modern day miracles, is that spectrum of ambiguity to literalness, to unmistakability. It almost always seems to be on the side of that. So anyway, that's what I say, is that's sort of the skeptical kind of the skeptical place that Nathan sort of I are coming from, and some of the questions we wrestle with on this as the expert. And I know that we've thrown a lot of questions at you, but at least somebody who has compiled a lot from experts over a long period of time, and people, how has your experience and your research kind of led you to have answers, you'd believe, to those kind of questions? And we'll give you space to talk a lot, since we've talked a lot about this for a while.
It's a No, it's all right. I started writing down notes because, speaking of different things that people are healed from and not healed from, I'm ADHD. So one question at a time is actually easier for me. So I had to start writing notes on this. And of course, we've had other things. I mean, my wife and I went through many miscarriages. So the claim that miracles happen is not the same thing as claiming that everybody gets what they pray for. It's not the same thing as claiming that if you do certain things, it will always happen. I think that's pretty much empirically falsifiable and has gotten falsified pretty well. And actually, the way I understand the biblical teaching is that Jesus and his early followers in the book of Acts, what they were doing, these were signs of the kingdom. So demonstrating Jesus is king in the kingdom of God. And you have certain passages like Matthew 12:28/Luke 11:20, and also Matthew 11:5/Luke 7:22. Those passages, well, the second one I mentioned alludes back to Isaiah 35 and Isaiah 61. And in light of that, and then more explicitly in the first passage that I cited, his signs were showing the coming kingdom, which isn't here in its fullness. Not everybody got healed when Jesus came. It was the people he was with who were healed, but he even says to his disciples in Luke, well, actually, maybe he says to some non-disciples, but in Luke chapter 14, he says, you know, care for the ill and the disabled. It's not like he's expecting everybody's going to get healed. And yet, in the New Testament idea, the kingdom is already not yet. So we're waiting for the full consummation, but the king is already come. So his kingdom is already at work in the world. And certainly we do see some of the kinds of miracles that Nathan talked about. Part of it depends on how you define miracle. Well, a big part depends on how you define miracle. But we also sometimes see the others as well. And I think because people are so eager to see miracles, and the kind Nathan mentioned, we do see those. The other kind, we do see them, but not as much as I think most of us would like. In terms of percentages, there have been statistical studies, surveys, and actually the majority of people, even in the U.S., do still believe in miracles.
I stand corrected. That's amazing.
Yeah. And actually, there was a survey of 1,200 physicians in the U.S., and the majority of those believe in miracles as defined medically. So that's a narrower definition. At least that was the context of the question. What struck me more was over half of the physicians answered by saying that they had actually witnessed what they considered a medical miracle. And these are people who probably are defining miracle fairly narrowly. I mean, not so, you can define it so narrowly that nothing can meet the criterion, obviously, but, and then you can define it like getting a parking spot, which, I don't know, maybe they live in a different location than you. But it seems to be more common or more commonly reported in the kinds of places that you have the circumstances most similar to the Gospels and Acts, on the cutting edge of evangelism, where people are being reached who've never been reached before, which is not to say God doesn't love other people, but it's to say these are for a strategic purpose. Now, when the New Testament talks about gifts of healings, or in James chapter 5, when it talks about anointing with oil, praying the prayer of faith, there's nothing there that says it has to be spectacular. So it doesn't have to be dramatic. A healing, just, it can happen through what God put in our body. It can happen through nutrition. It can happen through doctors. These are all God's gifts to us. In fact, when I talk with friends in Africa, I say, how come it doesn't happen here more? And they say, look, you guys have medical technology. That's God's gift. Quit complaining. I mean, infant mortality rate and maternal mortality rate in much of Africa is still 10 times what it is here. because they don't have enough doctors. So miracles are needed more in some places, but they don't happen all the time. And so it's like when Jesus feeds the 5,000, afterwards he says, gather up the fragments that remain. The 5,000, they didn't have anywhere else to get the food. I mean, the surrounding villages usually have like 200, 300 people maximum. So they needed a miracle then. Otherwise, you know, people diabetic are going to go fainting on the way back home. But gather up the fragments that remain. They wouldn't need a miracle for their next meal. It wasn't just to entertain them. God normally works through the natural causes that he's created, even with something as spectacular as the parting of the sea. It says that God sent a strong east wind and blew it back. So God usually works through natural causes. Even when he's doing something spectacular, he often will work through natural causes. At the same time, if I had been at the sea and it got blown back in time for me to get across and then it closed again, I would see that timing is rather extraordinary. Like, this wasn't something that happened, you know, at a certain time of day every week. But just looking at the questions, in terms of documenting miracles, it's true. I mean, like, if I were just going on the ones that I saw in my life, of the more extraordinary kind, I wouldn't have a super long list. I'm not out there on the cutting edge of evangelism. I spend most of the day doing research and writing and teaching. So I do see some things with my students, but in terms of directly what I witness with my own eyes, there have been a few. But I was in the right place at the right time, the kind of place where it was needed, and it happened then. But cumulatively, over the course of what God's doing around the world, there are so many of these, and many of them can be documented, including extraordinary ones. So we do have some accounts of people being raised from the dead. You know, normally when it's, in most countries, people are raised from the dead because they needed something extraordinary because there wasn't the medical help. But then you don't have the medical documentation. So, but we do have cases from the West where there is medical documentation. And we also have cases where it's organic blindness. There was one study, and I think there's another one in process, but there's one study that was published in a peer-reviewed journal not too long ago. It's not the only one, but one that was published fairly recently of a woman with organically documented blindness. And, you know, her family, they were a good Baptist family. I don't know that they didn't believe miracles happened today, but they'd never seen one. They didn't really think about it. But one time, as they were having their devotions together, she'd been blind for 12 years. Her husband just cried out in desperation, "Oh God, please give my wife sight." And again, this doesn't happen all the time, but immediately she could see. And this is also documented. It's clearly documented in the medical records. That's why it was able to be published. And we have other case studies like that where the medical documentation is available. Now, what you said about the mind, the placebo effect is a real thing. And if you got something psychosomatically wrong, well, great that it went away. I'm not complaining about that. That's a healing, even if it's not, you know, medically documented, you know, organic miracle. But but in terms of some of these are clearly documented organic, and there's no way. There's also something called psychogenic illnesses. So like stress or something can cause a person to have something wrong with their body. But normally those are healed through psychotherapy. You know, it takes months or years. It's not something that just goes away instantly. So we have those, but we also have the organic ones. And in terms of memory, you know, with the Gospels, we can't get medical documentation naturally, but we have the kind of evidence I have to use as a historian. So we have eyewitness testimony, people who were willing to lay their lives on the line for eyewitness testimony, which increases the credibility. We have multiple testimony, often multiple independent testimony, certainly for the resurrection. Today, we also have that. So even in cases where there's not the medical documentation, if we could have independent eyewitness testimony, that's valuable. Now, in terms of memory study, well, some of these things people wrote down, like John Wesley has one in his journal from, I think, December 25th, 1742. He has one in his journal where they prayed for somebody that they thought had died. And he, you know, after they prayed for him, he started moving, and he didn't get healed instantly, but, you know, over time he got better. And John Wesley seems to think that was a miracle. He records it that day when it happened, when some of us prayed for a storm to stop because we were planning to have an outreach that day. The parade actually was being canceled by the by the authorities that day because it was pouring down rain. It was supposed to pour down rain all day. We said amen. The rain stopped. A few minutes later, the sun came out, was out the rest of the day. You can say that's coincidence, but you can't say it's just a memory frailty because I recorded it in my journal that day. But even for long-term memory, obviously we forget way more than we remember. There's all sorts of memory distortions that take place. Daniel Schachter and others have pointed that out. But after 5 years, normally we remember at least key events that were most significant. Well, about half of the things we thought were key events that were significant to us. And then after 50 years, many of the things that have gone into long-term memory enough for 5 years are still there. Now, we're going to remember them in the form in which we typically narrate them. So our narration is going to shape those. Something else about, I mean, there's all sorts of stuff to say about memory studies. But the way, I have a section in my book, Christobiography, of several chapters. And one of them is on psychological memory and the relevance of that to studying the witnesses in the Gospels. Another is on social memory and the preservation of the memories through the community over time, where it tends to be condensed and you just get the summary, for which is actually psychological memory does the same thing. It's like a video compression algorithm. It compresses the material. But just to give one example, this is not a miracle. Well, some people might consider it a miracle that we remember it, but when I was in third grade, I was humming, I don't know if anybody still remembers Gilligan's Island, but I was humming the song for Gilligan's
Island. Oh, yeah.
In class. And I didn't realize I was doing it. And the teacher said, if you're going to hum that, you need to sing it in front of the whole class. So I got up and sang it. And at my 40th high school reunion, so this is about something that happened, well, when I was in third grade, it would have been 8 years old. So this was like 55 years ago or something. Anyway, in my 40th high school reunion, one of my students who had been in, one of my fellow students who had been in the class called her husband over. Oh, this is the guy I told you about. And he was able to tell me about the event that she told him about because she remembered it. Now, she remembered it because she thought it was funny. I remembered it because I was traumatized. You know, but, you know, we don't remember nearly everything, but sometimes stuff does stick with us and we can have independent witnesses for that. Another thing that was brought up, actually one thing that was brought up was about the charlatans. They're the ones, obviously, well, the people who have to pay for their television programs naturally are the ones who want to get the spectacular stuff happening. And so, I don't watch them, so I don't, you know, I can't say that they're all charlatans, but naturally most of the reported healings that you know, that are not just, you know, somebody's adrenaline pumping or just psychosomatic short term, but something where we can document they've actually been healed. Most of this happened through local churches praying, and they actually happen not just in charismatic continuationist circles. I am a continuationist, but even in cessationist circles, there are reports of these that are documented. I think they probably happen more often in churches that pray for them more often, but that's at least I've gotten more reports from those circles. But there are plenty of people, obviously, in those circles who don't get healed. And the reason I'm having to look down at my notes is because I'm not wearing my glasses. I still have myopia. But they're happening in other religions. This is one of the objections that Hume raised to eyewitnesses. So basically, the second half of Hume's argument, the first half of Hume's argument against miracles is that they violate natural law. Natural law, by definition, can't be violated, and therefore miracles can't happen, which he was using to refute the evidentialist argument for miracles by latitudinarian Anglican scientists in his day. But his understanding of natural law, making it prescriptive, doesn't actually fit our current understanding of natural law. And actually, he was using part of Isaac Newton's argument about natural law, even though Isaac Newton and the early Newtonians actually believed in biblical miracles. But the second part of Hume's argument, I think, and there's different readings of Hume, but I think probably is the undergirding for the first half, that he believes that miracles violate natural law and that natural law is established by uniform human experience. Well, how uniform is human experience? I mean, there was a Pew Forum survey done, I think in 2006, that looked at 10 different countries. And of people there who claimed the experience of Christian divine healing, it was hundreds of millions of people. So now some of those it wouldn't be like getting a parking spot, that's not healing, but it may be, you know, my headache eventually went away. You know, I mean, those things, we don't count them as evidential, right? But they're great, but a headache went away. But when I began interviewing people in a lot of those countries and in the US, I found that a significant proportion of them, the ones that people tend to remember, were much more significant than that. And so nobody is going to say that all those hundreds of millions of claims are genuine miracles. And certainly nobody better say that they're all only explainable as miracles. But we've still got so many that for Hume to start from the premise that uniform human experience excludes miracles, which would include the biblical miracles, which were part of his purview, that I don't think works. But one of his arguments, I don't think Hume would have appealed to that today, given, you know, the statistical data that we have. But one of Hume's arguments against the eyewitnesses, one of them is nobody who's from a non-Western culture counts, and nobody who's not white counts. So there's an element of ethnocentric racism in there, which everybody would acknowledge today. But Hume, he does various things that reduce the pool of qualified witnesses. Remind me to come back to the other religions. You can tell I'm ADHD, right? So, but one of the things he says, you know, in modern times, because there were, I mean, he was a Scottish Enlightenment event. I was going to say evangelist, Scottish Enlightenment philosopher. But some of the Scottish reformers had accounts of this. I mean, there were plenty of reports from the somewhat modern period of these things happening. But none of them were known in his circle, were reported in his circle. And one of the modern ones he cites is a Blaise Pascal's niece. So this would have been like at least a century earlier, but it's still in the modern period. Blaise Pascal's, or maybe two centuries earlier. Anyway, Blaise Pascal's niece had a running eyesore and it emitted a foul odor, and it was publicly known. When she was touched with a holy thorn from Jesus' crown of thorns, and she was instantly and publicly healed in the sight of many witnesses. Now, I don't believe it was a thorn from Jesus' crown of thorns. I see it as just a contact point for her faith, whatever, but she was instantly and publicly healed. The Queen Mother of France sent her own physician to check it out. So Hume says this was medically documented. It was public. It was organic. And how does Hume deal with that? He says, and we know this didn't happen. And then he moves on to his next point. So, I mean, Hume's essay, I don't know why people are so dependent on Hume's essay for their basis for saying these things don't happen. Because, you know, Hume just dismissed it, and he could get away with that because it was a Jansenist monastery, and the Jansenists were too Augustinian for the French Jesuits at the time, and they were too Catholic for British Protestants at the time. So, you know, he could say whatever he wanted about that and just dismiss it. So, but coming back to his argument from multiple religions, actually, he's not correct. You know, he says all religions start on the foundation of claims of miracles. That's actually not true. They're far more common in some than in others. But they tend to be, I think, most often reported in traditional religions. Hinduism, well, certain Hinduism is such a big thing, certain parts of Hinduism. In Islam, they happen in certain spheres, more often in folk Islam. But you have so many people, actually. China was not in one of the 10 countries that was surveyed in that Pew Forum survey, but around the year 2000, and there's no consensus about how many people are Christians in China, but in any case, it was millions of people by the year 2000. There was one report from within the China Christian Council that said roughly half of all conversions to Christianity in the previous 20 years have been due to what they called faith healing experiences. And in the house church movement, it was, you know, some were estimating like 90%. Of course, that was mostly in rural areas. But these were people who already had indigenous folk healing traditions. So it wasn't just, you know, oh, somebody prayed for me, my headache went away the next day. These were things that really were persuasive to people to be willing to change from one status to another. Not that they had to change everything, but to, you know, there's certain things like in India and China, monotheism, quite different from atheism and polytheism. So, I mean, there were certain things that had to change. And a number of reports of this from India too. Mozambique, there was a study, and actually I mentioned to you earlier, Josh Brown. So I didn't actually go to Mozambique. When I was planning to go to Mozambique, I ended up going to Congo instead. So I got some different reports. But in Mozambique, they had invited me to come because what was happening at that time, they would go into villages that had no church, and they would preach about Jesus. They'd preach salvation, and then they would pray for the sick, or sometimes they didn't have to start praying. Sometimes it would just start happening on its own. In village after village, deaf people were healed, and often blind people were healed, who were known to their entire community. So this, they weren't doing medical tests, but these people were known to their entire community as blind or deaf. The deaf people, obviously, somebody else had to bring them because they didn't hear what was going on. When they would get healed, the community as a whole would often become Christian, and they'd start a church there the next day. I actually was know some academicians who went there and witnessed this taking place. so that the government of Mozambique actually recategorized this region as predominantly Christian. Now things are very different. Jihadists have been slaughtering people. About 800,000 people have been displaced in the area. It was right after oil was discovered off the coast. It became a target for conquest, in a sense. So the situation there involves a lot of suffering right now. But eventually a team did go in there. They heard about this. They said, let's go in and study it. Josh Brown was one of the people on the team. He's the neuroscientist, professor and scholar from Indiana University, I mentioned. And he went in and did audio. And there was also a medical doctor and a nurse and, you know, others on the team. They went in there, and at this point, I think he tentatively believed in miracles, but he was astonished when he saw blind eyes opened. And he was testing people. He said he tried to fool them, you know, in terms of the deafness going away. But before and after prayer, some of them had dramatic changes. Some of them had minor changes. Some of them had no changes. But the majority of them had some changes, and some of them had dramatic changes in terms of the decibel level and so on that couldn't be explained. You know, they looked at what can happen in terms of in terms of hypnosis and in terms of just being psychosomatic, and it couldn't reach this level of actually changing the decibel level to that degree, or the eyesight to that degree. So there have been studies about that. Now the biggest objection you gave is also the one that tempts me the most, and that's the personal one. I mean, why do we see some people heal and not other people healed? And especially when it's people close to us or ourselves. And I think I can give philosophic answers in terms of, you know, it's the same as the problem of evil in the world. I can give philosophic answers that may be intellectually satisfying to some degree, but they're not existentially satisfying. And it's one thing to say, well, you know, this age is different from the age to come. Not everybody is healed in this age, but, you know, if you love Jesus, someday he's going to wipe away all tears. He's going to heal us completely. We'll have resurrection bodies. So what we get now is just a foretaste. And if it happens to anybody, it's a gift to all of us, because it's a reminder of God's promise of a world made new that Jesus paid for to make a new world. That's biblically satisfying to me. It's philosophically satisfying to me, with an eschatological resolution and enough evidence provided now for us to trust in an eschatological resolution. But man, it still hurts when it's somebody in your own family who's suffering, or yourself. You know, I mean, it doesn't make the pain stop. So, you know, it's one thing to say God does heal some people. I think we have evidence for that, and not just the healing, but, you know, stilling of storms or whatever. It's another thing to say, why this one and not that one? And for that, my answer is, the best answer I can give is, I don't know why this one and not that one. I mean, my friend Nabil Qureshi, he had thousands of people praying for him, maybe hundreds of thousands of people praying for him. I was praying for him regularly. I know another person who was fasting a day every week praying for him to get healed of his stage 4 cancer. If it was the amount of prayer, if it was the kind of prayer, he had all sorts of people who came and prayed for him. And sometimes he would feel better after the prayer. I mean, it's not like nothing happened to him, but eventually he died. And that's the story of other people I know as well. With Nabil, I was saying, God, he's still young. He's got so much he can do for you. Please take me instead of him. But God didn't take me, and God did take him. So I can't answer that on the existential level. On the eschatological level, maybe someday we'll understand the details of that.
So, yeah, I think there's a lot there that I think is really interesting and compelling. Right. Obviously, you know, the fact that, I mean, it's really fascinating to know that even like today, where today most people believe in miracles, the fact that even, you know, most medical professionals believe in some medically defined miracles.
In the U.S., countries more than others, but yeah.
Some countries more than others. Yes, you're right. Okay, correct. Thank you for correcting that. The fact that there are, you know, quite a few, like there are of many cases of medically, you know, kind of medically documented before and afters of things that, you know, of that are at least extremely extraordinary,
right?
You know, cases that fall under the category of extraordinary as we find in biblical narratives, you know, and with more medical documentation of that than even we have, and as well as examples of enough credible examples of eyewitness testimony that we would see it as reasonable, more than reasonable in any other circumstance, particularly because of the amount that we hear about it. So I'm just kind of summarizing for our audience, kind of the arguments that you've made. That's the fact that so many of these kind of, when you're talking about Christian healings versus non-Christian healings, a lot of the conversions happen because places where there are healing traditions can't heal the thing, and then Christianity comes in and the healing thing does happen. I will say, on the medically defined thing, one of the funniest things in the book that you talk about is people who are trying to get off disability and can't. You know, they have to go because they were on disability, and nobody, like, it's a really hard time to get off disability because they don't have a category for getting off of it in those cases. And so there are things like that cumulatively make it feel, for you and for many others, I would say, unreasonable to discount all of those as not having to do with prayer, not having to do with actually being healings. And I find that to be a compelling case. It doesn't answer all of my questions in terms of, like, you know, why does it seem that there's a spectrum? Like, you know, why does it seem to be that the more miraculous it would be, the less often we see it? You know, and it doesn't answer kind of, you know, but I do feel the strength of that case that you're making, that it's not simply dismissible. I'm going to take this over to, obviously, to Nathan before we wrap up.
I just want to say thank you so much, Dr. Keener, for taking those questions and thoughts and wrestles that I and many other people have seriously. I think there's a frustration that oftentimes there's an expectation that you just believe, and if you don't, it must be a sign of a lack of faith or a poor faith. And so I just want to thank you so much for taking the questions and thoughts and wrestles I've had and many others have had seriously. I also want to thank you for providing intellectually thoughtful answers to those. And while I'm going to have to wrestle with a lot of what you said, and this is going to be something I continue to kind of look into and understand, by that, I mean, I'm still a skeptic, everybody, but I do appreciate when someone gives reason for why they believe what they believe, even if it's not what I believe. And I think many of the things that you brought up today show me that you have brought reason around your belief and others' belief in the continuation and existence of miracles today. And I think that's a really valuable practice, and it's one I really respect. Well, thank you so much for engaging with those questions, not dismissing. So I really would encourage anybody out there, whether you are like me and you're like, I don't know about this miracle stuff, or you do believe in them, I really encourage you to pick up Dr. Keener's book and really dive in, because you've seen here today, he is someone who brings a thoughtful intellectualism to these questions that can very often be dismissed And that I think a lot of people have in their hearts, maybe they've even been kind of scared to vocalize their doubts or fears. And so you heard today that there are people who are intellectually not dismissing, but engaging with this stuff. So thank you so much for really addressing those in a thoughtful way. But before we wrap up and we head off into our last section of blesses and curses, is there anything that you would want to say, particularly to people like me, but maybe even people who are further off the belief spectrum than me, people who really cannot fathom believing this exists, who have a really difficult time. Maybe they did believe in God and miracles and the supernatural one at one time, but they don't because of things that have happened. But speak to those people as we wrap up today before we can jump to the next section. Just kind of what's the last things you would say as we're talking about this conversation?
Now, I really didn't mount a biblical case for continuationism because which I'd be happy to do, but that's not really what this is. This is primarily about.
That's another podcast episode.
Yeah, that's a different. Yeah, eventually I may write a book about it, but I've got a whole bunch of books lined up in front of it. I'm still working on everything else. So, but for others, when I was, and especially for those who are, you know, skeptics, like not just not believing in miracles, but not believing in God or not sure about God, when I was an atheist, there was a point where I started, well, I didn't know Pascal's wager, you know, the idea about how high the stakes were, but it seemed to me the stakes were pretty high. And so I was making fun of Christians, but I started thinking, you know, what if they're right? It's only like a 2% chance, but I don't want to stake all of eternity, even on a 2% chance. And I started saying, God, if you're out there, please show me. But I didn't tell anybody I was saying that. And so he didn't show me the way I was expecting. I was expecting empirical evidence. I was expecting, you know, something I could read, you know, that would persuade me. He sent to me a couple guys who actually couldn't answer most of my questions, but they did share with me that Jesus died for me and rose again. And God met me that day. If you're not sure, or even if you're pretty sure that Jesus and his teachings are wrong, or that God doesn't exist, never hurts to ask him. Ask him to show you.
Amen. That is something we can absolutely get behind. Never hurts to ask. And we love asking questions here. So why not ask? Why not try to ask God? You never know.
Do it. I'll say this just as an aside. That's my story too. When I was having I was raised Christian, but I was having very extreme doubts about God. I closed my door and I said, "Look, God, if you're real, please show me. If not, forget I said anything." So I definitely endorse the shutting your door and asking him. You lose nothing if it's not true,
and you might gain everything.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Well, thank you so much for doing this and engaging with this topic. Now, of course, we have our last segment, which is our blesses and curses segment of the week, where we take a work of art, media, or resource and recommend it, i.e. bless it, or diss it, i.e. curse it. And we always we always invite our guests to join us with that. They're not required to, but they always, they typically come up with some really fun ones and things that we haven't thought of. We'll get started so you have some time to maybe think of ones that you might want to do, and also best for last, Dr. Keener. You're definitely invited to join us. Would you like to join us with this?
Sure.
Awesome. Okay, cool.
Although I'll probably grab something nearby to...
Hey, that works. So Nathan, would you like to go first? You want me to go first?
Sure. I'll jump in. I just have one bless and one curse today. And my bless is actually a book on not if miracles happen, but that they can happen. So there's a guy, he's a mathematician in Oxford. He's a professor in Oxford who was very formative to my thinking. Early on, you know, this is a decade and a half ago, whenever it was, when I really started kind of taking my faith theologically seriously and had jumped in. He was one of those voices that really ushered my mind into the reason behind a belief in God. And his name is Dr. John Lennox, and he is, again, a mathematician, a professor at Oxford. I have no doubt that Dr. Keener either knows him or knows of him, but he wrote, I don't even know if it's a book. It is written down in book form. I believe it was actually a talk he did that was put into book form. But it's essentially the I'll just read the subtitle because it'll say it better than me. But the book is called Miracles, and is the belief in the supernatural irrational? And John Lennox is a very rational man, by the way. He's a mathematician, a math professor. And so he's not just someone with a big opinion like me. I'm just someone with lots of opinions. He actually has the requisites to show that he's a rational person. But he's talking about miracles and if they can happen and the rational defense of their existence, or at least their possible existence in the natural world. And so I really encourage you to pick up. It's a very short book, but it really is a well thought out and logical and intellectually rigorous book on miracles. So what we talk about today. So please pick up Dr. John Lennox's book, Miracles. I'm going to curse. And I believe I'm getting the movie right. There's so many with titles like this. I'm worried I'm going to curse the wrong movie because there's like seven of them that came out of at the same time in the faith-based world. So if I got this wrong, just know I'm talking about the other one. But I believe it's called Heaven Is For Real. This is a book that was based on a true story about a father who had a son who was going to die, and the son did die for a certain amount of time. And the son apparently came back speaking of heaven and what he saw there. I can't remember. I did see it a while ago. Joseph, is that the right one? Am I remembering the right one?
Yes, that's the movie. Heaven Is For Real is the movie. Yes.
Okay. And I believe this is the right one, that it came out that it was most of his testimony was fake.
That was actually a different
was a different book.
Oh, see, I knew I was going to do this.
They didn't ever turn the fake book into a movie. I got in trouble for that too. I had to actually, I had to retract something I wrote because I'm going
to have to follow that same boat retract. What is the movie that I'm thinking of?
I don't think it was made into a movie.
They didn't make it into a movie. It was just
examining Heaven Is For Real hoax. Okay, interesting, because I read an interesting article. Well, I'll just kind of gently curse all of these. My curse about these is the Hollywoodization and the Christians' kind of desire to make a grand myth, and you know, movies are essentially our visual myths and how we share them nowadays, out of these things, and their willingness to believe them without the dedication to measure and search, the willingness to do it without what Dr. Keener has done, which is you've gone to these countries, you've looked at the data, and we can come to different conclusions about data or questions, whatever it might be. But I would highly, you know, there was even a while ago at a very popular church, I won't mention the name, you know, there was reports of angel wings floating down during worship services and gold dust from God's throne and things like this. And the willingness that I saw from people to just immediately believe these things was really, really scary to me. But I also understand as humans, right? We have that bias towards, if I believe something, anything that I see that could be used as evidence, I will use as evidence. And there's a lot of these stories that were kind of made into movies for a while, of which I believe is Heaven's For Real, because I'm looking it up now and it does say that there was a hoax and that the account, there's a lot of holes in it. But regardless of whether it was true or not, I have no claims on that. I don't know what the son saw. I don't know what happened. But my problem with things like this is it sensationalizes spirituality. And it makes it so the reason you believe is because of this kind of mythological cool and this crazy stuff happens. And I don't think that's the reason to believe in God and to form a relationship around a spiritual reality. I don't think it's, and I don't think that's also good reason to show the world that you believe in something. And very often what ends up happening is you end up putting your faith in something that can't be reasoned, that can't be supported. And that's my problem with a lot of these movies. It sensationalizes a faith that I think is reasonable and grounded. And that is a bad kind of thing. And even just across a faith-based universe of films, very often the end of the film will culminate into a miracle happening for, and this happens in like a lot of a miracle happening for the person. And that's why they end up doing the right thing. That's why they end up believing. And I don't think that belief should be based on miracle, whether or not they exist. I think belief should be based on truth and reality, because I do believe that God is real. And I think there's good reasons for that. I don't think you need to wait until a miracle happens for a, to create and engage with faith. So yes, tentatively, I'm going to curse that movie. I'm going to do a little more research, but I am cursing that genre of miracles are the reason for faith. So those are my blesses and curses. Joseph, do you have any thoughts on that, on the faith and the miracle that exists within the faith-based film community?
I've been quickly Googling, and every Google I come up with is saying that Of Heaven Is for Real and Hoax says it's the Boy Who Came from Heaven book is
the Boy
the
Who Came
book.
From Heaven. I see. I told you I was going to get the.
Yeah. So and I don't think they ever turned that into a movie. I can't find evidence for that. But all I'll say is, regardless. Yeah. I mean, I definitely have a mixed feelings about the sort of the miracle genre in faith based. Because I do see what you mean. That they build a lot of this stuff around very fuzzy experiences. I do want to say that I'm going to have the humility as a modern Western Christian that since many people around the world have throughout history and even in modern day have come to Jesus through miracles. I'm not going to poo-poo that entirely, but we do agree that generally the sort of the soft sentimentality of faith-based films is one that I have well documentedly criticized, and the miracle genre is definitely a part of that, a strong part of that. It's to my blessings and curses. I will try to be quick. I also just have one blessing curse this time, very restrained this episode, but I'm gonna bless a documentary called Ascend Proof, which was a documentary about a kind of a young Pentecostal raised man who is struggling with the skepticism himself. He's had friends who've left the Pentecostal church and such because of disappointments around miracles. And he really wants it to be rational. So he's wrestling with that. And so he goes on this journey to kind of try to document miracles and find reasonable for miracles, stuff like that. And he doesn't, come to solid conclusions by the end. But that process of like asking questions about something and trying to make sure it can be something that's reasonable, I loved his ethos around it. And so I think anybody who wants to wrestle with that, that's a good documentary to go for. On the curse end, I'm actually cursing another documentary. Yes, people, I do watch documentaries. It's actually the documentary Cessationism, which... because I watched that documentary. I haven't watched as many documentaries from the sort of the Pentecostal wing that kind of try to do be a rigorous documentary, mostly because most of them don't try to do rigorous documentaries. But cessationism, and I don't want to criticize a documentary for not being something it's not trying to be. Cessationism, one basically was a lot of people who were cessationists who were making arguments for the fact that miracles don't happen anymore. And what shocked me was for people who were supposedly being like the super rational people, they made terrible arguments throughout it. I felt ashamed to be a skeptic sort of watching it, because they kept saying things like, well, this is the only time and purpose that miracles were done in the Bible. And I was kind of like, okay, would you cite a Bible verse there? Maybe some evidence for the points you're making. And that was something I just kept seeing throughout. They would just make a lot of assertions without evidence backing up. And I have a lot of skepticism, but I have a lot of skepticism because I'm requiring evidence for things. And I think that if you're going to be on the non-miraculous, there's no benefit to being on the non-miraculous side if you're not going to be evidence-based in your arguments. So that's why I'm cursing the secessionism documentary. And of course, if you want to see more of the problems with it, there's a lot of people with a lot more time on their hands than me have done long YouTube videos unpacking it. So
My fear is that we're marketing Christianity as a thing. Yes. If you become a Christian, you get a miracle. For the free price. And I think you become a Christian so you can interact with the creator of the universe and have a relationship with God. And that's my fear about a lot of these movies that revolve around, you should do this because you'll get X.
Yes.
So okay, that's my frustration.
No, that's a good point. I agree with that 100%. The problem with them is a lot of the thing of like, I'm going to convert because I saw a miracle was, this is proof that God is real, or he's more powerful than the other gods. And so therefore I'm going to enter a relationship with him. A lot of the faith-based films say, I'm going to become a Christian because when I do, I'm going to see the miraculous kind of more often. They kind of do it the opposite end of it. So yes, I agree. That's a good critique of that genre, as it often is. So yeah. Anyway, Dr. Keener, do you have any blessings or curses you'd like to share? And or?
Yeah, actually, your blessings and curses gave me some good ideas. Although, yeah, I actually didn't like the cessationism video either. I do think the people in that actually have some valid critiques of some of my fellow continuationists. I mean, some of the spectacular sensationalists, rather. having said that, I didn't think it was well done either. But in terms of the content, the biblically, I was just so embarrassed. It's like, I don't think I need to respond to this. But some of the miracle movies, actually, one of them was based on an event where I actually was able to interview some of the people, and I wasn't able to get the medical documentation directly, but I did get the reports of the doctors who obviously had the medical documentation. And so they can understand medical documentation better than I can. But anyway, but that's not a statement on the films. That's a statement just on that some of them actually are more substantive. Well, for the blessing, I wanted to have something nearby. This is going to sound very basic, but so I pulled up my Greek New Testament. Not that it needs it, my blessing. And the cursing, I was like, bless and don't curse. But I thought, well, I can curse something generic like genocide. There's plenty of that going on around the world. Back in northern Mozambique, northern Nigeria, I probably would consider what is going on in Myanmar that, and to some degree. And yeah, it's going on in a lot of places, and the media tend to focus on certain areas. I think because they know Western consumers have a short attention span, and so they go back to the same places, or maybe it's because it's safer to film in those places. But there was a news magazine to which I subscribed back in the 90s, and they didn't even give half a page on the genocide that was occurring in Congo DRC until 2 million people estimated had died. And I really lost a lot of, the problem isn't the journalists, it's the consumer nature of media consumption in the West, that they were spending more time talking about celebrities than meanwhile, the person who became my wife was a war refugee for 18 months in the smaller Republic of Congo. And that one, the news magazine didn't even mention the existence of that country. So maybe I should say I bless the BBC. Well, I won't curse the magazine by name. Maybe they're doing better now, but anyway.
Thank you. No, that's
U.S. consumeristic approach to media.
That's a good curse. I think that you won't get a lot of disagreement there. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Keener. This has been a great episode, and you have really, really done a service here. We really appreciate you engaging with us. If people want to find more of your work, get in touch with you, or if there's something particular you want to plug right now, where can people find you and where can people find your work?
Yeah, Amazon has most of my books. Christian Book Distributor has most of my books. Those are the easiest places to find it. If you want to go to my website, it's Craig Keener, all one word, .com. Although you have to spell it right. So it's CraigKeener. And I have a YouTube channel. I think if you on YouTube, you put in Craig Keener, stuff will come up. If your interest is in the historical reliability of the Gospels, one book I wrote was Historical Jesus of the Gospels. One that's more technical somewhat is called Christobiography, deals with the nature of the Gospels. If you want something that's not technical, that just gives you a cultural background in each passage of the New Testament, that would be the IVP Bible Background Commentary. I just did the New Testament part of it, but they have Old Testament too. And then My Wife and I's Love Story is Impossible Love. That's on a basic level. The more academic books are with Cambridge, Baker Academic, Birdman's, and others. So,
fantastic. Thank you so much. Yes,
definitely. We encourage all of our listeners who, if you're interested in these topics of theology and metaphysics of Christianity, jump into Dr. Keener's work. He's been doing this for a long time. And as you've heard, he's someone who, even if you disagree with anything he says, he's someone who you can trust to be honest and intellectually sound. So please go and check out his work, check out his videos, check out his books. I really, really highly encourage. We always talk about, we want to recommend good places and resources to go if you're interested in what we talk about here. And Dr. Keener's work are definitely a place we'd recommend you go and check out. So Dr. Keener, thank you so much for being here today. If all of you listeners out there enjoyed this conversation and want to hear more, please check out old past episodes. Connect with us at theoverthinkersjournal.world and on our Facebook page. We have a lot of overthinkers like you at Facebook. It's called The Overthinkers. If you want to get in touch with me, go to nathanclarkson.me, search my name, Nathan Clarkson, on any of the socials. Joseph.
People can find me on any of the socials as well. You can also find me at josephholmstudios.com and find my work at Christianity Today, Religion Unplugged, Relevant, Religion and Liberty, and others. And thank you so much again, Dr. Keener, for joining us. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. And remember, if it's worth thinking about, it's worth overthinking about.